The Guardian.
Welcome to this edition of the Global Development Podcast. This month, we're in Mali.
One of the basic causes of child death through diarrhea, through pneumonia and others is lack of access to water and sanitation and lack of hygiene.
A recent WHO report looked at water, sanitation and hygiene, also known as WASH, in health centres. Mali was one of the worst performers.
This is a huge issue, and as the report has detailed, we have, you know, upwards of almost 40% of facilities without any water access at all. And it became apparent that this was an issue that the health sector wasn't necessarily addressing.
This is Lucy Lamble, and this month on The Guardian's Global Development Podcast, we look at how health centres in Mali are affected by this problem. I visit the rural village of Diatoula and a clinic in the town of Kalabankoro, and I also go to a school in Bamako, where they're implementing a water and sanitation programme. But first, let's hear more from Mamadou Diarafa Diallo, country representative for WaterAid in Mali.
In preparation of our water and healthcare facilities project, I visited a few healthcare centers. We went to this big CSRF. The CSRF is the second level healthcare facility where they do most of the surgeries. Basically, they have water between 7 and 9. 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. After that, no water. So they will just have some small bowls where they keep a little bit of water here and there. And you're just talking about water. You're not talking about having soap or having any other, just simply having access to water. When the head doctor took us to the latrines, he said, these latrines, I can't go in. You can if you want to, but I can't go in. Smelling, because the pit latrines, they are filled, and even no resources to empty the pit. So I think it reflects what has been happening, what is really happening, because that's not even a community level. That's a second stage level of a healthcare facility.
So we're just coming into the village now, Diatoula. It's a rural community of about 1,000 inhabitants, so quite a big community, really.
So this is the chief. So they've come to say hello to you, and they're going to visit the village and also the health centre. So you're welcome here.
The health centre is staffed by just one pharmacist and one nurse, who both live nearby. Tagola Vinimalbaya is the centre's nurse.
So generally, all those who come to us are pregnant women, women who are ready to give birth, and also malaria patients come to us a lot. When we need water, we have to go to the traditional well, which is far from here. Patients and pregnant ladies who come to us need to ask someone in their family to go to collect some safe water somewhere. They have to go to the well 5 times. We need 5 buckets of water for the work. Once we receive the water, we clean the mother, we wash all her garments, and then we try to clean the room. We also give her some water for drinking. I don't know the number of latrines in the village, but here in the health centre we have 2. We have one where we go to wash ourselves, and the other is just for our needs. There is no ladies. Everyone uses both.
Maggie Montgomery is from the World Health Organization.
That's a really important time where infections can occur, and there's high risk to both the mother as well as the child in terms of delivering an environment that doesn't have clean tables, where those that are facilitating the birth aren't using clean scalpels to cut the delivery cord. So there's really high risk involved when these wash services aren't in place. And there's also, of course, all of the emotional and psychological issues of you know, as a woman, not having, you know, access to a toilet or not being able to wash yourself after this really important moment in your life.
My name is Fatima. I am 16 years old. I grow vegetables and sell them in the village here. I used to have a baby, but unfortunately he died. When my baby died, he was 15 days old exactly. I came with my family members. We had water because we had gone to collect it from the traditional well in the village, so there was water at my disposal, and I didn't have any special complications.
So there was a new review that just came out last month in the WHO Bulletin that found upwards of 40% of newborn deaths are linked to sepsis. And these are all, you know, for the most part, preventable infections, many of which linked to lack of water or, you know, safe hygiene practices.
I noticed he was not feeling good. He didn't eat anything, he didn't drink anything, he couldn't do anything. I tried to give him some traditional medication. And I could see black spots on his body. One day later, he died. So it took only one day.
Boubacar Abida Maiga is the WHO WASH consultant in Mali.
There's a very important link between mortality rate and WASH today, because one of the main causes of infant and mother mortality is infections. And to avoid that, we need good sanitation and good health. So for us, it's very important that we put at the disposal of health centres all the necessary tools and products that they need in order to promote and also be able to practice WASH in a very efficient way. So the World Health Organization has been working a lot with the Ministry of Health of Mali to reduce infant mortality and encourage the community to observe WASH. Jointly, we've put in place a plan to help the community.
There are NGOs such as WaterAid, UNICEF and Oxfam working here to get WASH facilities in place. But one major barrier is the cultural aspect associated with something as simple as hand washing, for example.
Of course, there are still many social barriers that are making the work very difficult. For example, in some communities, some people still think that by washing their hands with soap, they lose part of their traditional power.
Bakar Diara is the president of the health centre here.
So we are in a rural area. It's not easy to actually do some promotion activities because there is no light, there is no TV. Sometimes people, I mean, the community members can see something on TV, and then when you come to talk to them about it, they already have a global idea. But here, when you come to talk about those things, people even find it weird. They don't understand what you're referring to. And so this makes it very, very, very difficult.
Maggie Montgomery from the World Health Organization.
Some really interesting work that's going on around creating habits, and one of those habits is hand washing. And some of this has to do by looking at what are the determinants of psychological behaviors and how can we influence those factors that suggest someone is more or less likely to wash hands. So there's the whole idea of norms, of, you know, if other people are doing it, then someone else is more likely to do it. The whole idea of self-efficacy, you know, do I know how to do it? And also the idea that it just becomes a culture and something that is not only encouraged, but almost seen as if you don't do it, you're not a healthy, respected person. I think also there was perhaps a disconnect, you know, in places where the burden of disease, especially communicable diseases, is quite high. There sometimes is a perception that the risks are very low and that there's so many risks that, you know, why should I engage in this one behavior if I'm also drinking contaminated water and my food may be contaminated.
Mamadou Diarafa Diallo from WaterAid again.
We're working and getting a very some evidence-based communication tools that will work on what the evidence is on the ground, what the culture says, and how you can use that and turn it around, use the opportunity in quote of Ebola and other tragic situations and say, oh, so you should, probably there's a need to change for that.
Mali's been able to contain its isolated cases of Ebola. But what's happened elsewhere in West Africa, where countries have faced widespread outbreaks, is that there's been an obvious shift in the wash culture among communities.
They've transformed many of those communities into hand washing communities, and now you see hand washing stations almost everywhere. People are washing their hands quite frequently. So hopefully it doesn't take something as awful as Ebola to change behavior, but I think having the infrastructure but as well as creating a culture of hand washing are two ways that such changes can come about.
Today we've come to visit the health centre in Kalabankoro Extension Sud, in the South Extension. It's just outside Bamako in a neighbouring district called Kulikoro Sec de Kati, about 10 kilometres from the centre of Bamako.
Eli Prosper Arama is president of the centre. He's also a consultant at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Development.
So the community is made of all the components of the Malian, let's say, population. For example, I am Dogon, so we have some Dogon families, some Bambara families, some Fulani families, and so on. So all the different components of the population of Mali are represented here.
The centre is brick-built and very well-maintained. It's something the community is extremely proud of. They started fundraising in 2007 and were able to open in 2013 with a doctor, a nurse, a midwife, a pharmacist, and an excellent association that does its best to keep funds flowing.
Dr. Daniel Boire is the doctor here at the health centre, and his own thesis was on the impact of the lack of adequate water and sanitation on mortality rates for children under five. He explains the situation with hand-washing facilities in the centre.
Throughout the centre, you'll see in most of the rooms, the consultation room, the delivery room, the laboratory, and all the other major rooms, you'll see some hand-washing kits. And we also encourage people to wash their hands at the entrance before they get into the centre. We've put in place a team which takes care of cleaning the place in the morning to make sure it's kept safe. And we keep encouraging people to wash their hands with soap, even at home.
In Bamako, the capital, there are Ebola awareness campaigns everywhere, on billboards, on radio and television, even as you enter businesses. But here, further away from the outbreak, it's a little more difficult to enforce hand washing.
I recognise, to be honest, that since the moment everyone said there were no more cases in Mali, I think everyone stopped doing it. But I promise I will take initiatives to relaunch the process of washing hands, because we're still hearing cases, say, in Guinea, and so maybe we should just keep on. And this will be a good incentive for the community to keep washing their hands at home. Also, the government have given us some material in order to wash our patients' hands, and this material is used here at the centre.
The WHO advocates seven main basic standards for wash in health centres. Here's Maggie Montgomery.
Certainly for water, there must be supplies on site, and our recommendation is anywhere from 500 to 400 liters per patient per day. And obviously, we advocate for either water and soap or hand rubs, which is something that our infection prevention colleagues have worked diligently on at all points of care.
So this school has 4,500 students.
That's a lot in one place.
Je m'appelle Adama Issa Diarra.
She's Adama Issa Diarra. I am the director of this school, which name is School F. So this school is part of the washing school program set up by WaterAid. So before this water point was, these facilities were, let's say, put in place, the situation was very, very, very catastrophic because, first of all, students are used to pee everywhere. They used to go for open defecation. There wasn't any sanitation as such, and it was very, very difficult. And, of course, this was used to bring some diseases.
As we make our way to the rear of the school, we can see rows of latrines. And in this school, they've got clearly designated areas for boys and girls.
It wasn't easy at the beginning, so the change came step by step. because people were used to, let's say, some other practices, both at school and also at home, and they didn't understand at the start. So we had to really insist, keep on telling them. People continue training students at school, and also even sometimes go to families. And finally, people started understanding, and now it works. Not all our families have access to safe water, and here we are, let's say, when you try to dig a well, the wells are very deep, and it's not easy, and it costs a lot of money, and not everyone has the means for that. So having access to safe water is a big problem, big challenge here. So one key problem is students come very dirty to school because, first of all, they don't have even enough water, safe water for drinking. So we don't even talk about washing themselves or washing their clothes. So this is why, as you can see around you, many kids are very dirty, and this is something that happens daily.
The school's wash project we visited in Mali seems to be working. But in the village, they're facing basic infrastructure problems which limits access to safe water.
Ourselves, we built, a well, but we've taken all the safety measures to have safe water, but we are not linked to the official adduction system. The government's contribution is to set up the facilities. Once the facilities are in place, there is a state-ruled company called SOMAGEP, which is kind of a company for managing safe water in Mali. We still don't have that official system of providing safe water. Most people are just connected to small water points which are not sufficient for the community. But we hope this project will be put in place soon.
At a bigger infrastructure scale, of course, this requires securing safe water supplies, whether it be through boreholes or through the piped water supply, or even rainwater catchment, which could, you know, offer a at least a seasonal opportunity to obtain water.
Mamadou Diarafa Diallo from WaterAid again.
So most of the health centers where we went, most of them, they do have probably a water point, but it might not. The water is probably for 2 hours a day or 3 hours a day. So the rest of the time we ask, so if you have to help a woman to deliver, what will you do? We still do it. So how? Do you have gloves? Do you have anything to sterilize? Is it ordinary? It's ordinary.
So we're advocating that there are some steps that healthcare facilities can immediately take. For example, you know, making sure that within the delivery room, even if there's not piped water available, that there's clean covered buckets with soap and water available, so equipment can be cleaned, tables can be cleaned. You know, there's at least water available for hand washing and safe water for drinking.
But Maggie Montgomery is the first to agree that to implement even simple wash measures, there needs to be awareness at the health centres about the minimum standards and clarity about who's in charge of ensuring they're upheld.
Most facilities have structures in place. They are just not maintained. And so, you know, a second thing is making sure that within the healthcare facility, there is someone whose job is to make sure toilets are clean, that the doors are not locked so patients can access them, and that there are water for hand washing after using the latrine.
The success of WaterAid's Wash in Schools project has provided a tangible model. The NGO is now taking this to healthcare centres to help get them engaged.
We were able, through this project, to do a good advocacy which now has resulted in the fact that the government has decided to include wash in the curriculum of the teacher training school, which they didn't have before. So the primary school teachers and secondary school teachers will be now trained in WASH so that they would do WASH as a subject in the schools.
We've had quite a tricky time as a team finding anyone at the department or ministerial level who's prepared to do interviews. So what's it like trying to work with the government and hold those responsible to account here?
Yeah. Very, very challenging. For the past 2 years, it has not been very a stable government. So I think I don't think there have been a government that has stayed more than 12 months. So you are always coming back to a new minister. Say, can you remember we did? Your predecessor signed a commitment. He said he would put 5% of the budget on this. Oh no, really? I'm not aware of it. Okay. It's difficult because of the context, because there was a reconstruction agenda, so I think donor money was more directed in building up a strong army, buying more weapons, preparing more for any terrorist attack.
Getting the government to come on board with the schemes is an important part of the advocacy work for organisations like WHO.
The WHO has always worked with the government of Mali to focus on some very important aspects such as WASH. In practice, WASH is shared by many ministries. There are also many government organisations who have special responsibilities concerning promoting WASH in the field. Many partners are working in the field to promote WASH and also help communities understand it and accept it.
Evidence is obviously key here, and yet the WHO report found that data about health centres was almost non-existent.
Even the data that does exist, it's largely from the African region. We find that there's lots of inconsistencies about how WASH access is monitored, and very little done in looking at aspects of quality and functionality in the reliability of supply. Most, if not all, countries have health management information systems, and ensuring that WASH is included in those is really important, because in our review we actually didn't find a single monitoring information system that included WASH. WHO and UNICEF have committed to taking on this aspect of the monitoring work that they're already doing in communities for the next round of the Sustainable Development Goals. So I think having regular reporting and reflection of that data will also help to not only improve the quality of the data, but also to improve our understanding and where we really need to focus efforts.
WaterAid Mali is also doing what it can to collect data through its Wash in Schools program.
We just have to give more attention to that, and like I said, as an NGO also get evidence, show a model that works. That could be very simple, because some of the things are just technically the design has not been good enough to make it work. So if you have water between 7 and 9 and you know it, why don't you get something that you can store the water, where you can get other, but the technical design is poor, the social intake prioritization is not there.
This needs to be an issue that's taken up by the health sector. If it's always seen as a WASH problem and a WASH issue, it won't be sustainable. We've found, you know, just in the short amount of time since the report was released in March, we've had a lot of positive feedback, and we've had countries, for example, like Ethiopia, India, Zambia, Sierra Leone, committing to be early adopters. So early adopters in terms of strengthening the standards and supporting implementation of those standards, but also making sure that there's the financial and human resources.
So awareness of the issue is growing, and with the Sustainable Development Goals imminent, could this finally be the moment where both finance and political will make health centres like those here in Mali as safe as they should be? that's it for this month's Global Development Podcast. Thank you to our translator in Mali, Boubacar Siddiqui Keita. Thank you to our producer, Carrie Stewart. All our programmes are available on The Guardian's website at theguardian.com/global-development and on iTunes, SoundCloud and all podcasting apps. My name is Lucy Lamble. Thanks for listening and goodbye. This is the biggest story in the world.
We will look back on these times and we will think, what on earth were we doing?
From The Guardian.
This is a story about people, and this is a story about possibility.
It's a story that's eluded us for decades.
It's clearly the most important story that we could be thinking about, and yet you scan the daily newspapers and it's almost absent.
A topic which The Guardian is now throwing itself wholeheartedly into.
I'd seen how we'd done it on other things.
Climate change.
Bill's simple proposition and his urgent plea was, this stuff has to be kept in the ground. It cannot be dug up.
So we're letting you in behind the scenes. Editorial meetings, bids for commissions. You'll hear what works, as well as our mistakes. And along the way, you can judge how we do. Is there a new way to make the world care?
That's the challenge. What can you do that will force them to sit up and pay attention?
The biggest story in the world on The Guardian.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.